Because of some technical difficulties, we don't. Unless anyone has a MacBook Air to VGA adapter on them, we will not have a presentation, I'm afraid. But we'll start out with some introductions, so we'll start down here.
I'm Deech. I'm a president of Arch Reactor. It's a St. Louis-based hackerspace, I'm president and founder.
I'm Jeff Cotton, or Omegix. I was one of the founders of Makers Local 2x6 in Huntsville, Alabama.
I am Rayford Story. I'm one of the founding members and founding treasurer of Freeside Atlanta, here in Atlanta.
I'm, we'll go with Null Set.
Okay.
Member of Freeside Atlanta since its inception, and my job is to stick DeLoreans in the space and wait until people start complaining.
Yes, Freeside is actually a DeLorean repair center in disguise as a hackerspace.
We're really a car shop.
Yeah, kind of.
If you need a place to put the DeLorean, we've got space.
He has a few.
Our hackerspace is actually...
You might regret those words.
Our hackerspace is actually in a building that used to be a Ford dealership. So we actually have an elevator that can, in fact, handle a DeLorean. So...
Nice. We've got some floor jacks.
So, as like most Packer spaces, this panel will be somewhat freeform. We have a rough outline, and we'll take some Q&A. Do you actually have a VGA? Is that VGA out?
It's MacBook Pro. Is that the same?
Recent MacBook Pro?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What do we know? Yes, I think so. Yes.
Ah, sweet.
Weird. That is
sweet.
That looks like it's me.
If I had a beer, I would give it to you.
You can always rely on the kindness of strangers.
Yes.
You win three internets.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we do have open wireless.
Great.
Well, that's a party all in itself. Give me a minute.
Yes, that's
a
word. All right.
So we do have a presentation for you guys.
In a couple moments. While I work on this, I kind of want to gauge the interest in the audience here. Who here is a member of a hackerspace already?
Sweet. Sweet. One, two, three,
and a couple.
Four.
Do you mind saying where from?
Lexington, Kentucky.
What's the name of your space?
Collection.
Sweet. Who else raised their hand? Where are you from?
Charleston, South Carolina, and it's Make Lab Charleston.
Nice.
Huntsville, Alabama, Makers Loop.
Nice.
Anyone else?
Anybody else?
I think that's it.
Represent your space.
You're founding a space right now?
Yeah.
Do you have a name planned or where?
It's in Jacksonville, Florida, and I think the name's called Altair.
Cool.
Well, you should do what some of my favorite hackerspaces have done, and have a big vote on like five different names, and whichever one wins, throw it out and just pick whatever you want.
That's how most things go, I think. Okay, so we will, as we kind of go through this, I've got a couple things to talk about, but. This is an excellent presentation. I think anyone that's been very involved in a hackerspace at any point in time so far has run across this presentation. It's dated, but it's still completely valid and probably one of the best general guides for starting and maintaining a hackerspace. It's done by one of the most famous hacker spaces, Chaos Computer Club, and they're very popular in Europe, and they kind of led the whole movement. So. This is what we founded Freeside on, and I think you two have already seen most of this presentation before.
Yeah.
I'm going to fly through it. Okay.
I like how they can watch your notes, too.
Yeah, that's right. I know. I'm so prepared. Okay, so... what we'll do is I'm gonna run through this, and we'll talk about like the solutions that we've run, and then we'll look at like the suggested ones here. You always have the question like when people start meeting is which should come first, the infrastructure or the projects, and in this case I think it just says make everything infrastructure driven, right? So once you get a space, make projects and like drive people to build it out. Freeside, for example, was in like really run down. We found some very, very, very sketchy yeah. things in the walls and on the floors and everywhere you name it. So, what were your guys' experiences in space-wise?
Well, when we started to set our stuff up, we did find initially that a lot of it was infrastructure, but we found that it was kind of only to a point, because we actually kind of split off into a couple of different groups because we actually have a board. So we took our board and put them in charge of infrastructure and building out and building out and building out and trying to make the space as nice as we possibly can. And then that's basically the other, everybody else just, you know, broke everything while we fixed it. So, but yeah, it's, you need to have, we found that you really need to have the basics, but once you get to a certain point, you can get bogged down on like, you know, should we have, you know, should we drop everything and try and raise the money for a laser printer? That was a big discussion with us. Mm-hmm. And we ended up saying, no, we can buy lots of tools, other tools for what we pay for a laser printer. So, but you got to have a space. Just get a space. It doesn't matter what it's looked like. Most hacker spaces start out in the sketchiest little rooms that they can afford, which this, we were in an abandoned brewery when we started. And it was...
Was there any brewing equipment left?
Yeah, but it was pretty nasty. Yeah, it's a limp brewery and...
Most hacker spaces eventually brew beer, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, we're there.
Do we have any of our hacker space beer here?
I don't think so. No, I think it just got bought.
Oh, we're saving for the Maker Faire, right?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, Maker Faire is next weekend for anyone interested. Yeah,
Mini Maker Faire Atlanta.
Sweet. Google it, yeah. So if you're still in Atlanta or if you live in Atlanta, it'll be the first and should be fun.
Makers Local actually started out doing their projects first. We started working in somebody's apartment, and we just met every Sunday, just started working on things, and then eventually we took a tally and said, hey, who here wants to put in enough money to actually get a space? And our projects really drew in the interest, and then we just went and found a space.
And you guys went through a couple spaces, too. I think when I visited, I went to your second space.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah. The first one was like 500 square feet, real tiny. Yeah.
That's about where we were. Yeah. We've gone through two as well.
I think we were kind of special there. We started out with a 5,500 square foot location, and we've stayed there.
And we started with about 60 members, too.
We basically had...
It is in the hood, but...
Yeah, our rent is dirt cheap.
we had five guys, and this is actually plays to the infrastructure question. We had five guys that said, because we were meeting in Pizza World, and remember that's very important. Most hacker spaces start in the food court.
coffee shops,
yeah, exactly. Whatever your
someone's from Amsterdam,
yeah. But we basically had five guys that said, okay, how much are any of us willing to say to commit to for a year? And we collectively said, well, we can all commit $100 each a month, and we will pay for it for a year if we have to, and if nobody else joins, then, you know, fine. You know, we're out of the money for a year, but, you know, we tried. And we kind of threw down, and within 2 months, we threw an open house and had 350 people tromp through our shitty little space. And then that's where our membership started to grow from there, and now we're at about 50. And we make enough money to pay the rent, which is cool. We also charge a lot less. How much do you guys charge? Just for like membership dues.
For membership, we have a standard like gainfully employed individual is $80 a month, and then $40 for full time students or unemployed.
See, our full time membership is $30 a month.
Wow.
And supporting members, which is basically we have three levels. We have a community member, which means you've signed up and you show up occasionally. And if you're a supporting member, you don't get any other rights, but you've shown up enough that you feel guilty and feel like chipping us $10 a month. And then $30 means you're a full member, you can get a key, and then that's when we start to actually shake you down for money, because that's how we do our budgeting. Nice. So you buy into the mafia when you get that point.
We're
super cheap.
Something we probably should have started with that I'll go back, we'll cover now, is I wanted to ask everyone up here, what is a hackerspace to you?
Oh, yeah, that probably would have been a good thing to start with.
Yeah, start with. But, hey.
So, hackerspace to me is a community workshop that provides the means to build awesome things. We like to say that in Arch Reactor knows everything. No individual knows everything, but as a group, we know everything, and we can build anything. And we want to provide the structure and the ability for anybody to show up and say, I want to do this. And it doesn't matter if they have any idea what it is or how to get there, we can get them there. And so that's what the hackerspace is to us.
Jeff?
Actually, that's the same sentiment I think that I have and the majority of our members have as well. It's a place to collaborate, pool tools, equipment, knowledge, and share.
Yeah, same thing here. It's collaboration being leading, and also it's like a social outlet for geeks that are interested in making things, right? Because I'd say that, I mean, most of the hackerspaces I've seen are probably like half and half, like actually doing things and just sitting around shooting the shit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We talk about making so many things.
Yeah, right. Talk is cheap, though, right?
Now, I think that there's a distinction between a hacker and a maker. Oh. And for me, a hackerspace really, it almost inevitably turns into a makerspace. Because some people have the idea of a hacker as information security. And we had a few of our members that really wanted a space for information security and nothing else. And so when we bought a MakerBot, they're like, what? This isn't a hacker space. This is a hacker space, not a maker space.
Well, with that, you could dispute. Yeah. Like,
to me, it's a place to go and actually build things. And,
yeah. And we had that argument.
And get knowledge.
Hacker's a very loose term anyway. I don't want to get into defining what it is.
So in my mind, it's sort of a maker space.
I've been arguing about that for 50 years now.
Exactly. It's also a place that I don't have to clean up after myself, right, Rayford?
So you think. So we'll keep moving along here, and we'll do another one.
This is just like a hackerspace meeting.
Yeah, right. Is now the time to really start your hackerspace? Shouldn't you wait? Have you really thought of all the problems? You'll never think of all the problems because there's a lot. There's tons of problems.
We actually have a rule at our place that don't make up problems we don't have.
Because we've got
people that will sit there for like, and they'll come up, well, what if this happens? Well, what if this happens? Yeah. Well,
the members are our only real problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The members. Hackerspace would be great if it weren't for the members. This kind of leads into one of like the founding things we came upon was don't make a lot of rules. We kind of have a don't be an asshole policy at Freeside, and that encompasses everything, right? There are a lot of analytical people out there that would love to make a rule for everything, and then sometimes those same people would like to game the rule that they just made, right? So it's best not, you'll waste too much time and effort trying to make a rule for how to do everything. And it's best to try, it doesn't always work, but to try and come to a consensus of like, let's just work on this together, and otherwise you get lost in making rules and you never like actually hack at anything.
I think the balance we found at Freeside was once someone's actually doing something, they sort of have the authority. So, like, you know, standard practice sort of becomes codified, but not necessarily as a rule.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That works pretty well.
Yeah. Our rule, we're, to use a phrase that's actually kind of common in hackerspaces, we're a duocracy. The doers make the rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's how our space got painted electrical cord orange.
Yes.
We just showed up to paint it, and we said, "What color is this going to be?" Yeah. And we went and got an extension cord, and took it to the desk and said, "We want it that color."
And sometimes you'll find that the most animosity is driven towards the people doing the most. And the people with the most animosity are doing the least. So it's best to avoid that and to try to just, you know, don't get caught up in personal vendettas or anything like that. Just kind of...
Unless you have a guy that writes a procedure for taking out the trash, which we did.
First you have to put a QR code on the trash can.
You don't inventory your trash?
You know, you're making that joke.
I'm making that joke because we had that suggestion.
We very nearly had barcodes on the trash cans to make sure that they didn't go away and that they could be inventoried easily.
So like, this is an easy
one
here, too.
He's gone now.
We'll go to the next one. What's the obvious answer to this one? I think. Anybody?
Want
to
guess?
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Oh, wait.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Sweeping channels in the
ocean.
Are you gonna
have a mailing list, a wiki, or a web forum? Bum bum bum. That's a 6-month conversation. Just letting you know.
Don't forget IRC channel.
And all of them start out with one guy going, well, hardly anybody uses a web forum anymore, or hardly anybody ever uses a mailing list anymore. That's how both sides of the argument start, and there's no solution to that. Well, there is, actually.
We have a Gopher site.
Yeah, you can only find out what we're doing if you finger or something.
You connect to our BBS.
Yeah, nice. We have two 2800 baud lines.
So you want to set up a hackerspace in your city alone, you fail. This is an interesting one. This one actually worked better in Europe than I think it did here. We tried to found Freeside this way, being that Atlanta is so spread out. If you live in Atlanta, you know that, like, Marietta is not always considered Atlanta. And if you live in Marietta, maybe you don't want to go all the way to the other side of town to visit your hackerspace. So if you do found a hackerspace, try to help out others, and maybe even, like Freeside is intentionally set up such that we could be an umbrella corporation and eliminate the administrative duties of anyone else that wanted to start up a hackerspace in Atlanta that had the following, right? And we could just take away all of the bureaucratic parts for them of filing and you know, incorporating and all that stuff. So that's just generally a good one. How would you guys solve this one? The getting off your ass problem. Exactly.
I'm not sure if we ever actually solved that one.
So this is a good one too. If you're founding a hackerspace, initially, like, identify the strong personalities. This is just kind of like any kind of group. People that have experience with leading other groups, identify some like natural leadership. And even if they're not like a dictator type leader, it's good to have someone to make a call that can end a stupid argument or like a pointless discussion, right? I mean, you guys kind of have somebody at your hackerspaces that kind of say, like, you know, shut up, we're going to do it this way.
Yeah, it gets me in trouble, actually. I've gotten yelled at a couple of times because I said, you know what? I don't care what color it is. We're not going to get to the painting phase for 2 months anyway. Can we just put a drill to it yet? So.
That's not that great.
So, yeah, we found that to solve the get off your ass pattern is that the people who decide they need to solve that problem need to get off their asses themselves. And once you get, it's almost like hackers are herd animals, because when you see somebody else in the space making something really cool, if you have any business being there at all, you're not going to stand there and go, yeah, that's nice, and walk away. You're going to either want to join in on whatever that project is, or it's going to start. You're going to start looking at it and going, "Well, I would probably do it a little different. Well, maybe if I do this over here like this," or it'll start a whole new like cycle of planning and thought, and you'll end up doing another project completely. But I think that just getting a few people to actively work on projects in the space will get more and more people wanting to work on projects in the space.
Yeah. So this next one, I'll kind of shorten it. It's like the problem of you have one drill to start out with. How do you guys kind of? I'm assuming your hackerspaces have shared resources, and do you guys do anything to ensure the maintenance and, you know, fair use of those?
Well, for the most part, sharing tools hasn't really been that big of a problem. If somebody's using the tool that you want, you just kind of wait your turn. The tool really isn't all that wrapped up. The hardest part we've had is probably sharing the table spaces. You know, you want to use a table, but someone else's crap is all over it. What do you do? Do you move it? That person's going to get pissed off. So you kind of need some kind of structure to say, okay, when is it okay for me to move other people's stuff if they've left it behind? And that can get hairy.
At Freeside, we painted all of our tables with whiteboard surfaces.
We stole that idea from them, by the way.
Yeah, we stole that idea from you guys. So what we do is, if you're leaving something on a table, you have to write your name and a date. And if it's not cleaned up within some reasonable amount of time, and we're not going to go into what the rule is for reasonable, see earlier discussion, Everything that's left out gets thrown in the don't leave your shit out bin. And
which is
anything that's in the don't leave your shit out bin for more than a week or so becomes public property or gets disposed of.
Yeah, we have the free shit shelf. There's a big pile of don't leave your stuff out.
Yeah, we actually found the problem that we started out with too much table space. It's good to have, like, I think, to start out with a smaller amount of table space that everyone has to share, because otherwise too much space just leads to clutter, right? Free side is debatable, but it might actually be a little too big. The largest space or the largest amount of shelving is not always the best, because sometimes there's like an expense to that, right? There's always an expense to sorting and cleaning more space. You guys seem to be very kind of cozy, but also incredibly well organized when I was there.
So. Sure.
They cleaned up before you arrived.
Looking at me.
Actually, I really like the free side, the amount of shelving that you guys have. That is amazing. We're trying to duplicate that at our shop right now. We're well on our way towards getting that done. Actually, Bill's a big part of that.
Yeah, you can build, you can find plans for basic shelves, SketchUp designs and stuff like that, and tables on just about, like, all kinds of websites if you Google it, and you can build really good shelves for, like, $30-$40 each, you know, so...
And if you're really clever, we did all of ours with 2x4s and plywood, and we actually just made a plan that covered the entire lower wall, which also created bench space.
Yeah.
So we have lots of shelves.
Do you guys have a kitchen?
Mm-hmm. We have a kitchen area with like a.
Is it food safe?
Are you an inspector?
Yeah. So this is basically the same thing. This is just like teaching people how to cook. We have the same problem with cleanliness again. Don't be upset if you are the one person that does a little more. I'm not saying that, like, don't, like, get pissed and shake your fist at the guy that's a total slacker, but, like, there will never be a completely even separation of work in any group of people, right? And if you spend too much of your time worrying about that, then you're gonna, like, not want to be there. There's a million ways to learn to hate a hackerspace and to be frustrated by it, and you kind of have to learn how to just deal with those and to deal with the personalities and to realize that, like, you're there to do something, and it might not necessarily be to be pissed off at other people all the time. So...
good kitchen. The way that I look at it is that our hackerspace is about 2,400 square feet, and it's a great big, really nice workspace that I pay about, I pay my dues, about $30 a month, so I have this great workspace to work in, and I consider picking up picking up every now and again. That's just kind of what I pay to have this fabulous workshop to work in. The people that aren't doing anything, they're not picking up or whatever, well, they're still paying their dues, which means that they're still helping to pay for this fabulous workshop that you have to work in. So use their tools and use the big space that they help pay for and that they never show up for.
Yeah. And this next point, it's good to have, like, a chill space too, because, like, it goes back to the social aspect. It's good to just hang out sometimes. A lot of people at Hackerspace have full-time jobs, so they just come there and hang out. Also, it's very good to have weekly meetings, not in the sense of, like, official take, strict minutes and, make policy decisions, but weekly meetings are a great time for open houses. And the more that you can invite interested parties of all backgrounds in, like, welcome them into your Hackerspace, the more membership you'll have. That kind of thing. Do you guys have, like, an open house, or how do you do that?
We do monthly business meetings to meet our charter and our tax requirements. Yeah. But we have a weekly open meeting that we usually plan silly stuff up, and we make it a point to make sure everyone knows that all of our events and our meetings, including the business ones, are open to the public, and you can bring anybody you want. Anybody can show up and hang out, and you know, we never charge anybody to come and be our friend.
Yeah,
the weekly meeting is also good when you're founding a hackerspace. For example, Freeside met, was it once a week at Manny's?
Weekly at a bar, yeah.
And they just started there, and when you're there every week at the same night and the same time, people start to know you, and they say, well, where are those guys meeting? Oh, over here.
Yeah.
So that's something that we sort of, is a holdover from our founding that we just kept doing. And
it's great to kind of nurture the social aspect, to welcome new people in so they can meet people. And it's, and don't use them as a time to solve your hackerspace's like big problems, because you don't want to like air all your problems in front of your potential members, right? So you want to talk more about the cool stuff that you want to do.
It's the first date.
The projects and things like that. Yeah, yeah. You might or might not have a shower. This isn't really that relevant. Some places have a bathroom. If you do, it's good if you spend a lot of time there. So this is always one that varies. We kind of talked a little bit about how Freeside and you guys do dues. Jeff, why don't you talk a little bit about yours? Because yours is kind of unique, I think.
Ours is more of a pledge system. Every member that is accepted into the Makers Local is asked to choose an amount that they are comfortable paying. And your membership acceptance is not based on your amount pledged. The only thing that we ask is whatever the amount you want to pay, whether it's $20, $50, $100, whatever amount you choose, make a commitment and pay it every month, because we have to budget. And I've got to admit, this has given our treasurers a lot of grief. You know, there's a huge advantage to saying this: have a set dues amount. You know how much money is going to come in every month. But at the same time, we get a lot of people coming in that maybe they can't afford $50 a month, but they can throw in $10. And as long as you know, as long as they're making it their donation every month, and they don't lapse for 3 months in a row, they're still a member in good standing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's basically our solution here, is collect fees regularly of whatever nature they are in. That one real quick.
I think the important thing here, though, is getting people to commit to making that monthly payment, because you have to budget. You know, even at ours, like you said, you know, ours is so cheap, we have to budget. So once you become a full member and commit to that $30 a month, we will come after you.
Yeah.
And we will twist your arm until you pay us, because that is how we pay the rent.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The other good thing, while we're on the subject of finances, we'll kind of go on a little bit of a tangent here on that, is we set up recurring both PayPal and Google Checkout subscription options.
Mm-hmm.
So people can just go in, sign up for a subscription, and it's like, you know, an auto bill payment.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have like a set day of the month. We're not, you know, gonna break your legs, but you know, we need our money, right? Yeah. Or we can't pay the rent. The other thing that we did is we did a ton of fundraising out of the gate and set some very realistic financial goals. Hackerspaces inherently are not, I mean, they're kind of about reinventing things from scratch. And so, you know, finding your initial treasure is usually someone who's relatively organized and really cheap is your best bet. And then set a buffer. Like, Freeside has a financial goal. We keep $10,000 in the bank, and if we ever go below that buffer, we stop spending on absolutely anything.
I want your problems.
What's that?
I want your problems.
We were lucky enough to have a couple of good donors initially, but if we go below that buffer, which we currently are, we don't spend anything except for like toilet paper, right, and like trash bags. Like that's the only thing we'll spend money on. And to be very financially realistic, if you get a sum of money as a donation, you know, stay within your goals and be realistic, because you never know what's going to happen, right? Your membership could dip for 6 months, right? And you could only have, you know, a handful of people, and you want to be able to survive that kind of thing, right? You don't want to have, you know, some company in town go out of business, like the big IT company in town goes out of business, everybody has to move, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're just completely out. So.
The other thing as far as finances go, get an accountant and a lawyer. Mm-hmm. No, you're not smart enough to do it yourself. Get an accountant and get a lawyer.
I don't know. We didn't get an accountant, except for some tax purposes. not like a regular accountant.
Yeah, see, the thing is that hackers tend to consider themselves very smart people, and so they will read a legal document and they'll say, I know what that means. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
Words don't mean what you think they mean. So, most places, I know in St. Louis we have a place called the ALCC who provide low-cost and free lawyer and accounting services to places that are promoting art and technology and other things like that.
Yeah.
So we applied to them, and we actually got an incredibly well-known, top-notch lawyer who is now, you know, we now have him on retainer for, you know, legal questions, and we're meeting with an accountant to get a lot of our taxes straightened out. And by that, you should go ahead and infer that we screwed it up really well the first time.
So are you guys nonprofit or going towards 501c3?
We're getting 501c3.
Okay.
And yeah, and we completely borked it the first time. So in fact, the lawyer looked over what we had done, and we're like, okay, can we fix it? And he says, how do you feel about starting all over? Are you really attached to that name?
Oh, one thing it is useful, I don't have a link up here. If you are looking at starting a hackerspace, Preside published its bylaws as like a template. We just removed all the names with the intention of other people being able to use them if they want. So if you just want like a good template or something to start with for bylaws, they've served us pretty well so far. And we just kind of modified something else that was posted.
On the subject of 501c3, one of the interesting points is if you are a 501c3 and you have membership dues, those dues are not tax deductible. And that's actually one of the beautiful things about Makers
Local.
That's
debatable.
Because it is a donation every time, and you set your own amount. It's not a membership due. It's tax deductible.
There is some debate about that, actually. I've talked to various accountants, and some say that you... And the nonprofit section of the division of the IRS, for the most part, they're there to help you. And so, you know, the term dues gives the implication that, you know, you get something in return for it. But as long as you still maintain it as a charity organization, and to have like regular access, you're not restricting access to the space altogether, exclusively to those members. It's just that those people pay regular dues and are looked at as like maintainers. So it actually varies. I think
so
if you
get an accountant is what that
will get an accountant. Yeah. But I think that if you kind of, you know, I get the impression that it's. Because we were worried about that too. We were very worried about you know, writing in the bylaws of required dues not being acceptable as donations, because the IRS likes to see certain amounts of donations coming from public funds and things. But it's apparently that they're okay with that. I mean, I don't know.
And if you can get a half an hour to an hour. And a lot of and even still, even if you don't have a local organization that will pay for it for you, there are a lot of lawyers that will give you an hour's worth of consultation for like, you know, $100. You know, whatever their initial consultation, they'll sit and they'll chat with you for a little while, and it's amazing how, because before we got a lawyer, before we got to sit down and talk to him, we had all of these arguments, I'm sure you guys did too, all of these different arguments and interpretations, and I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of this, and it's a lot of pressure. You don't realize how much pressure it is until you actually do it, but it's a lot of pressure because you're worried about screwing it up. You're worried about the longevity of your space, you're worried about liability, all this fun stuff. And a half-hour conversation with a lawyer will, to clarify those questions, will take loads off your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you guys, but I found out when we actually talked to a lawyer that a bunch of the stuff that we were worried about, he was just like, what? No, whatever. And it was nothing. It was
that goes back to the
nothing.
Over-analytical problem.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times the problems you come up with are not problems. They're not problems until they're actually problems, right?
And you have to realize starting a hackerspace is basically starting a business.
Yeah.
Even if it's a 501c3 or a nonprofit, it's still a business. Yeah. And so you have to get your ducks in a row and do all that. And that's the part of the work that I'm glad I missed out on. I joined Freeside right about 1 month before they picked their space and signed the lease.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. This goes back to the meeting thing about having like a weekly meeting. Nobody can pick the right day, right?
Right.
So you just like they
Tuesday.
Always think it's a Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just Tuesday's great.
What day should you meet? Tuesday.
Yes.
That's it.
Yep. So you want to draw in new people and provide an interface to the outside world. What do you guys do around promotion?
Well, we have some public events where they're actually, we'll have an open house where we say, come in, check out everything, and at the same time, we'll have a gigantic pig roast at the same time. And
it's feed people. That
feed people.
Such a good plan.
Yeah. And we'll come in and we'll say, the event is free. If you choose to eat, it's $15 a head. You know, something like that. It raises money for the shop. And at the same time, people are coming in. They're seeing what you're about. They're gaining interest. They're going to come back.
Yeah, because the one I attended was great.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And we do open houses as well. We have like build out days where we welcome the public and things like that. But mostly for us, ours is a big Tuesday night thing. And of course, we're here plugging our hackerspaces right now. Right. So anytime you can promote your hackerspace,
blogging is also really big. Have a blog, and when you make a new post to that blog, go to Reddit, go to Make, go to Hackaday. And just pimp that out so that somebody will pick up the story, and then suddenly, I mean, that's how we got the whiteboards from Makers
Project
Local, I believe.
Yeah.
And then actually, we stole that idea from them, and we blogged it, and then Hackaday linked to us.
Yeah. It's cool.
Which I think we credited you guys.
Yeah, we did credit Makers Local.
So, that's a big thing. NYC Resistor, which many of you may have heard of, they're like one of the kind of the pioneer hackerspaces in the States. They kind of have an unofficial rule, of course, that you're not done with a project until you blog about it. It's the best service you can do to your hackerspace. Anything you work on there, it doesn't matter how mundane you think it is, someone will find it interesting, and they will want to know what you do. So designing or engineering something new, if you don't document and publish it, it's like, you know, you haven't given it back to the community. So not only do you like kind of get the warm and fuzzies because you've contributed to the greater good, but you also get linkage to your, you know, site through Hackaday or, you know, Make Blog or something like that. And every time we get a post from our blog that's reshared on some other higher traffic site, like the next 2 weeks we have like 5 or 6 new people show up for the open house meetings.
We also had a lot of people. Creative Loafing is a local Atlanta magazine. Their branches in other cities. But we had a Creative Loafing writer somehow find us. He did an article. And for over a year, we would have people come to our Tuesday night meetings and say, where did you find us? And they say, oh, we read the Creative Loafing article. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous. So if you have any media contacts, get them into your space. Get them talking about it.
The biggest paper in St. Louis, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, actually did a front page article on us.
Nice.
It was a Saturday front page, but it was on the front page, and we got loads and loads of people. If you can get local media interested,
get on Colbert.
How much turnover has your space seen? I'm curious.
What do you mean turnover?
How many members have you lost
and then gained?
You know, interestingly, once we've actually gained a member, we haven't lost them.
Okay, so you haven't actually like lost people yet.
No,
because Freeside's experience is pretty big turnover from people having to move or just
because we don't,
or getting a new job from some large tech company that then moves them to
New York. Well, okay, granted, I'm sorry. We have lost a couple of people to that, but we don't actually press the membership issue at all. In fact, we don't even talk about membership to people until they ask. And then, really, our membership is very guilt-based.
Yeah, it's the same thing here.
You know, and so we do have people who show up, and they don't actually become a member, but they show up for like 6 months, and then they go away. Mm-hmm. And then we have people who show up for 2 or 3 months, we don't see them for 6 months, and then they show up, and they're like, okay, I'm ready. And they join, and then they're really good people. So... So we do. We have a lot of supporting member turnover, but we have very little full turnover.
This is another important one. If you guys can read it, this will hold true with any group of intelligent people that are not already a debate club. So You do need someone to lead the discussion. People get way too emotionally invested. People say they're not emotional, but they really are.
Anybody who says they're not emotionally invested in whatever your conversation you're having, that actually means that they're very emotionally invested.
And this is where it comes into having that strong sense of leadership that can kind of cut in and say, nope, I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think. This is how we're going to do it. And while that sounds heavy-handed and like dictatorish, it helps.
It's called leadership.
A benevolent dictator.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we've already kind of talked about bike shedding and things like that. If anybody doesn't know what that is, it's wasting way too much time on senseless stuff.
I think green's the only appropriate color myself.
Yeah. I like a nice...
Our default answer is orange.
Your shirt would tell me that, too.
Well, it's also very flashy. I mean, it's not like you can miss this shirt. Yeah.
How much time do we have left?
We are minutes? At 7:40. So we have 20 minutes.
Okay. I have a quick video I'll show you without audio of Freeside again. Self-promotion. Oh, hi. Email.
Oh, so you're going to hijack this to promote your
I wanted to show a hacker's.
How many people in this room are in or near Atlanta that you're going to visit Freeside? All right. About Huntsville?
Yes. I want to see your faces.
Anyone in Huntsville?
Anybody come see me in St. Louis?
St. Louis, anyone?
St. Louis, anybody?
No.
All right, so we win. All right, and we'll see all of you at Maker's Faire, Mini Maker's Faire next week.
It's also worth mentioning, they just wrote a book that was published. Hackerspaces.org is one of your best places to go. They have a great mailing list. It's just a general non-structural collaboration of hackerspaces. But they just posted this PDF. Some guys wrote a book on like the beginning of the hackerspace movement. I haven't read it yet, but...
I've read
should be interesting.
Part of it. It's actually really interesting.
Cool. So I thought I'd plug that. That one's, how long is this one?
The new one?
That one's 6 minutes. We'll go with the new one here. This is Freeside as it exists today. Where's the play button?
Do we have audio? No.
Well... so well. But I'll kind of narrate it myself. How about that?
End screen.
See what you did.
Must be Chrome.
Yes. Lack of internet. We'll play this one since it's already buffered. This is our space when we first got it. It's not as impressive since it doesn't have any of the shelves or anything we're talking about. We have a large warehouse. I don't know if you guys can see this.
This is motion sickness 101.
Yes. Showing up very well either.
Should we just move to Q&A?
Yeah, let's just skip to Q&A. These videos aren't going to work out that well. So
anyone have a question for any of us about Hackerspace's founding?
I saw that hand in the back first.
You didn't mention anything about insurance.
That goes back to call a lawyer and an accountant.
Yeah, and they will tell you, get it.
Yes,
It's actually, it's not expensive. I think ours is something like $35 a month for $1 million.
What kind of insurance do you have? Do you have like just the board of directors? Or?
What do you mean?
So, like, at a minimum, most lawyers are going to recommend, and again, I'm not a lawyer, so get your own, they're going to recommend that you get at least board of directors insurance, which basically, if that's, it's a very cheap insurance that it covers against injuries, things like that. It basically mainly prevents someone that did try to sue you from personally going after members of the board. Like, worst case scenario, someone sues you for, like, a multi-million dollar thing, and they win for some reason, then you just dissolve the corporation and everybody gets to walk away.
Right. So, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't understand when you said board of directors. What we actually have is, you know, we have a business entity. The business entity has the insurance.
Right.
So if anybody sues us, they're going to be suing Arch Reactor. And you know, and I think we've got like $1.5 million liability for the space and something like that. Yeah. So, and it's cheap. It's like $35 a month. Totally worth it. And there's actually a lot of spaces that a lot of places or landlords won't rent to you unless you do have your own insurance. So, like ours required it.
Yeah, ours did too. Actually, yeah.
So, next question.
Who's next?
So, I wasn't as familiar with the concept of hackerspaces as sort of like an official thing before coming here and listening to you guys talk. So, do you guys have any sort of restrictions
or on like the types of projects that you allow people to work on? Or does everybody kind of do their own thing? Or
at Freeside, we have a rule that all projects have to be legal.
Yes.
You're not allowed to do anything illegal at the space. We don't have a rule as far as things that are dangerous. That's sort of covered by the don't be a jerk
rule.
Yeah.
We have a general kind of qualification of the, like, we lock out a lot of the welding equipment, and we're lucky enough to have a millwright who is a member. You want to get a very, very diverse group of people. We started out seated very much with people in the computer industry, but we've got a millwright now. We've got people that are big into sewing and crafts, like thing. And the more diversity you can get, the more everybody learns, and like the better, hackerspace you'll have, quite honestly. So we cover everything from welding classes. We have woodworking classes, some which are some of our most popular, as well as electronics 101, hacking. I mean, you name it. You know, whatever people want to learn and we can teach, we try to.
And we also invite people to bring projects that they're working on outside. And, you know, bring your electronics project to Electronics 101 and we'll help you with it. As far as non-members go, non-members are not allowed to use our tools for safety and liability reasons. But if you have a member that's willing to sort of guide you, then you can do that. Members, however, can use whatever tools they're qualified to use. And, work on whatever you want. In general, we try to say if you're going to store something, be actively working on it. That's about it.
Yeah.
We have a pretty strict don't blow up our shit rule.
Right.
that's pretty much
that goes into our don't be an asshole policy.
Okay. Yeah. So I got the impression that it was a lot of electronics and computer stuff, but you guys said you do have a lot of, like, sewing.
Oh, yeah.
It really depends from hackerspace to hackerspace. At Freeside, it's, like, maybe 50-50 and maybe even more on the woodworking. But what we found is that it's people with a background in electronics that want to learn woodworking and things like that. So there's more than enough people to do the electronics, and we usually maintain about 50-50. But again, it just depends upon the people that you get in your group, what they're interested in learning, and what you make of it.
Yeah, we really go through cycles over the year, because depending on, like, during con season, a lot of props, a lot of sewing, a lot of, you know, that sort of thing. During the winter, we do a lot of electronics. During the summer, you know, fall, when people are, you know, wanting to make things for their house, we do a lot of woodworking. We've just got everything in there.
Hackerspaces are what their members make of them.
Freeside's got a lot of 3D printing, and I think of ourselves as a cross between a computer club and a car club.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got people working on all kinds of projects.
Yeah. Okay, I think we had another question over there.
Yeah, two questions. One, how do you handle the checkout for being able to use the welders? Do you have a formalized, you have to do this before you use it? And the second is the tools club member, or is the tools all owned by the hackerspaces?
The welding equipment at Freeside in particular is owned by the millwright, and so you have to have his permission before you use his tools, because they're very expensive and they're very easy to break and very easy to hurt yourself.
Yeah, we do the same thing for that, for like the welder and stuff like that. That actually belongs to somebody, and you have to ask them.
That kind of goes into the thing. I mean, you can make strict, strenuous rules around it, and there's, you know, you can do that. But for the most part, it's like, if the professional says that you're qualified, then that's mostly what we go.
And for liability reasons, we never tell anyone that they are certified to use
certain tools. Don't tell someone you've certified them in anything.
No,
what was the second question?
Yeah.
What was the second part of that question? Okay.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions? People use the tools when we're reasonably certain they're not going to kill them. That's what we tell them.
The other question was about the tools being owned. Some of our tools are owned by the space. I came up with an informal group called SIG Tool at Freeside, that the idea is if you want us to have a tool that we don't have, then you say, I'm willing to put up $50 to this tool. Here's what the total cost will be. And we get people to churn it in. And then once we have enough money, we'll buy the tool.
Yeah.
For example, our MakerBot was about maybe 20% space funds.
And
a few members kicked into it, and we were able to buy it. So that belongs to Freeside now, and that money that we used to buy that tool could be a tax donation. There's also some tools at the space that are on loan, and that's sort of, you know, generally it's labeled and you ask who owns it before you use it.
One thing you will find amongst all hackerspaces is that we have, and well, maybe not at all, but one thing that I've seen a lot is that we have a member's storage area. So the general shelving units that are outside, like, that contain all of the scrap electronics, a lot of the basic tools, soldering irons, things like this, are for ourselves and, you know, like, community use. But we also have a section set aside where everybody gets a bin or a locker with their name on it. So that if you have a tool that you bought and it's yours and you don't necessarily want anybody else using it, then you can, you know, you can go put it there, and that's kind of like, you know, your space to
we do
that.
The same thing.
Yeah, that's pretty much universal, and it works out well because a lot of people are willing to share some things but are a little more sentimental about others. So.
We do have a one thing that you didn't mention. As far as tools that are tools or equipment that people bring into the space, you can either donate it or loan it. And if you put it on loan, well, actually, either one, we actually have a little form, a little sheet that they fill out on Google Docs, and it just generates a spreadsheet that you put, you know, your name and the serial number and what it is, mm-hmm. and then whether you're loaning it or you're donating it. If you donate it, it becomes property of Arch Reactor. But if you're loaning it, if you ever decide to leave and you say, well, I'm taking my toys and I'm going home, then we know which toys are actually yours.
Yeah,
so it's also good for to get the value of it as well, because on our insurance, we have a certain amount that will be covered in the event of a fire if the property belongs to the organization. But if it's something that somebody has brought in but doesn't belong to the organization, there's another column of how much that will actually be covered of other people's stuff.
Right. Yeah. And that spreadsheet is what we provided to our insurance people.
Got another question over here?
Yes, from a liability perspective, how does the organization protect itself against individuals, like, say, background investigations? How do you ensure that you're allowing you're not allowing the wrong element in?
Time.
Yeah, basically time. We have open house meetings every Tuesday at Freeside, and if people show up and, you know, if somebody wants to be a member, they're going to tell you right away. They're, you know, oh my God, this is cool, I want to join. So you say, come back next week. And then even better than that, we do build out days where we have like one day a month and it's like, you know, come install some drywall for us and then we'll really like you.
If you have a truck, you're pretty much guaranteed membership.
Oh yeah.
So basically,
box truck?
It basically comes down to a system to where, at least at Freeside, then somebody kind of becomes your sponsor, and then they say to the rest of the group, like, this guy's cool, I promise. Right. And then, you know, anyone, this is something, you know, that groups do, but at Freeside we have like a veto thing where any one member can veto someone from becoming a member if they say, look, I saw this guy steal something at a, like, you know, a store or something, you know, anything like that, they can veto it. And that has actually happened in our case.
We have we do a similar thing where people come in with a request to be a member. They have to be a supporting member first, and then in order to become a full member, it actually requires a majority vote at any given membership meeting, which is any Tuesday where we have enough full members to meet quorum. So we have 26 full members now, so we need 14 people. But they have to be voted in, and if they haven't been a member, if they haven't been a supporting member for more than 6 months, they require three people to actually say, yes, I will sponsor this person, they're not a jerk.
Yeah.
And if they've been there for more than 6 months, it only requires one person. But that is to ensure that, you know, we're not going to give a key to our space to anybody with $30 in a pickup truck.
Yeah.
You know,
it's also good. I mean, every hackerspace solves this problem, or like, you know, their own way and comes up their own rules for it. But it's also good to have a security system, you know, mm-hmm. too, with some cameras on the doors or something, you know, just so, you know.
Did you guys have the big privacy advocate argument about cameras?
Yeah, that definitely comes up. You'll have to deal with that. But the root of that argument is that we trust each other.
Right.
Right? So the big thing is you'll get into these arguments where, like, maybe people are questioning if we should record things because of privacy. Well, we're recording things for the purpose of each other. And if you're worried or paranoid about the people in the hackerspace, then, like, you need to either get over that or maybe, like, it's not the right place for you because you're there to work with other people. It's not... Hackerspace is not about any one member. It's a collective, and it's about people learning to get along. So yeah, that's kind of how we came into that discussion. It's like, yes, it's a privacy thing, but we're not sharing it. It's stored only locally. And things.
Right. The only time we're going to pull it up is if we notice something's missing or broken. So, because we're in a building with a bunch of other people. I mean, the landlord rents out the space to various other organizations, and some of them are careful about their memberships, and some of them are not. So we have had occasions where somebody has left the door to the building proper unlocked, and stuff has walked away. So, you know, we keep our stuff secure for precisely that reason, and the only time we ever do anything is if something is suddenly missing. Where's my laptop?
Yeah.
We'll cause us to review it, but...
A lot of times things, like, people jump to the conclusion something was stolen when it wasn't.
Yeah.
It happens pretty often. Things, when you have enough shit, stuff gets lost.
Right? Yeah. Have you checked under that pile over there?
We have another question. Anyone else?
We're getting close to the end here.
If not, let's choose him to the other panels. We have some other panels that some of our members are involved in. I'd like to just tell you guys, open source and medicine. It's going to be a really interesting talk. We're using 3D printing to aid in podiatric surgery.
Neat.
Yeah, so that's a talk that is, Science Track, I think.
Yeah. That was one of our more recent exciting members, who is a doctor that's into 3D printing, and we were really excited to get him.
Yeah, so we can, if you have a CT scan and you can get it to Freeside, we'll be able to give you a print of your bones.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Hacking 101 and 201 that some of our members are involved in as well. I think there was one more panel.
And a general purpose 3D printing.
Oh, general purpose 3D printing panel.
Yep.
So any more questions or... Nope.
Can you give an example of some of the projects you guys have going on?
3D printing.
Freeside, the open source 3D printing, reverse engineering, commercial 3D printer. DeLorean rebuild.
Yeah, LARPing. We have a lot of
Some LARPers. The Solar. If you guys are into that, check them out.
A lot of stuff.
We've got a weather balloon. We're putting a weather balloon up to 90,000 feet on September 11th. So that's when our launch is. And theoretically, later this year, if you go to our website, arttractor.org, if you're all interested in helping us out. We've got a Kickstarter going to raise the money to put a microsatellite into low Earth orbit, which is really
awesome.
Cool.
Nice.
So
nice.
We're working on that. That'll go up to 195.
Wait, you guys in Huntsville, miles. Maybe you have some spare parts laying around.
Yeah, anything.
Actually,
there's probably some auctions going on at this point.
The Hackerspaces in Space competition that wrapped up, one of our members is actually trying to make a glider that they're going to launch, try to get up on a balloon and see how far they can get it. Get it across the ocean.
Other stuff that we've got going on was like we've got the heavily modified power wheels for the maker competitions. We've got several 3D printing projects. We're in the process of building a 3D resin printer. One of those.
A DLP or?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. And
we have a forge too. We pour aluminum every now and then just for fun.
We've got a kiln that just needs power.
Yeah, we've got a kiln.
We have a kiln that's been waiting for about a year for power.
Yeah,
it needs it pulls 10,000 watts.
We used ours to heat the workshop.
Another thing, when you're setting up a hackerspace, government surplus auctions are great.
Oh,
I got a cone tin kiln for $150. That is about like that and about that high. It's massive.
Yeah. This man has an unhealthy addiction to Craigslist.
Do not be afraid of your local scrapyard or surplus metal places because they have amazing things. They don't have just lumps of iron or whatever laying around. I mean, they literally have lots of interesting things to dig through, and we've gotten a good half of our
things. And there's always the fun debate of do we buy cheap tools or do we buy good tools? Freeside was in the middle of this really long debate of what should we get, this cheap Harbor Freight drill press or get a really expensive one, and it got very heated. And a really nice drill press just showed up in the back with a note that said Merry Christmas. And that pretty much ended the debate. But, you know, don't be afraid of Harbor Freight.
Is a shop, what do they call it?
But that goes back to how action can end debates.
Yeah. Yeah, duocracy in action right there. We have a shopsmith from 1947.
Oh, nice.
That is a incredibly dangerous piece of machinery. That it converts from a drill to a lathe to the what we refer to it as the world's most dangerous drill attachment, which is the planer attachment, which is like just these three big jagged blades sticking out at random angles that you can't come within like an inch of.
We did have a gas powered forklift very briefly.
Nice.
We gave that back because forklifts are incredibly dangerous.
So much.
No one got hurt because we had someone that was our millwright looked at that and said no.
And sometimes in the hackerspace, you do have to have Papa Bear come out and put on his fun governor hat and say no.
Yep. Cool. Well, if there's no more questions, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up.
One more.
Back, go ahead.
Absolutely. We actually, there is a DIY bio movement. So not in Atlanta. We had someone that wanted to set up a bio lab at Freeside.
And actually, we inherited we inherited from someone that like basically a whole like chemistry set and bio like set. We have a lot of equipment.
And we had some space set aside for it, but the problem was the person that was most interested in it is a biology instructor, and so she has access to a lot of really nice bio equipment. And so for her to set up the lab at Freeside wasn't really worthwhile, and we couldn't get enough other people that were interested. So if you're interested in that, then definitely come to Freeside and say, hey, I want to do this. And, you know, if there's traction, then we can do it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is if you want something in your hackerspace that's not there, then you go there and bring it. You know, if you want people at a hackerspace that aren't there, bring them, you know?
Yeah, all you have to do is explain how incredibly... You have to convince them how incredibly cool it is, and then it will happen.
You had a question?
If you think that you're going to convince other people to do stuff for you, then you're wrong.
No.
Yeah, that's not
going to happen. No, you have to make it... You have to start the ball rolling, and then other people will help. There's lots of people who will chip in, they'll throw down money, time, whatever, but nobody's going to make it start for you.
The hard thing is finding ideas, honestly, and then people to actually move on them. Mm-hmm.
Could you feasibly get a hold of research chemicals other than buying off the Silk Road?
Most chemicals are not hard to get, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you can buy them from the same places that the labs buy them from.
Bulk
is a bit of a problem sometimes. Like, you're doing a resin printer, I heard one of the problems with that is material. You call someone, you're like, oh, I need this material with these properties. And they're like, great, how many train cars do you need?
Right, yeah, that's the problem, yeah. We sell that in 10,000-gallon batches.
Okay.
Oh, time to go.
We're
going
to have to wrap it up, I think. So, thank you for Scott for hosting this panel.
So we are Freeside Atlanta, Makers Local 256, and Arch Reactor. Check us out on Google. You can find us. And there will be a DeLorean in the